Welcome to the GoTo Podcast. Each episode covers the brightest and boldest ideas from the world's leading experts in software development. Tune in for practical lessons, compelling theories, and plenty of inspiration. GoTo gathers the brightest minds in the software community to help developers tackle projects today, plan for tomorrow, and create a better future. Stay up to date with the latest in tech through GoTo's top-rated events held online and in person in cities like Amsterdam, London, Copenhagen, and Chicago, and by subscribing to the GoTo Conferences YouTube channel, where you can find thousands more high-quality dev talks. Learn more at gotopia.tech.
Welcome to another episode. My name is Helen Scott, and today I'm going to be interviewing Anna Skulikari. So Anna is a creative. She uses her communication and her storytelling, and she's used it to tell Git in a simple way. So Anna, welcome.
Thanks for having me, Helen. I'm excited.
I'm excited too. I'm going to see how many stories of my Git frustration I can weave into this interview. So Anna's published her first book, Learning Git. It's on the O'Reilly platform. You published it June last year, Anna?
Yeah, yes. June last year.
So I've got a copy of the book. I've been very efficient and put it back on my bookshelf over here, so I will get it out soon. But Anna, for the purposes of this interview, let's start right at the beginning. Tell us a little bit more about you and what you enjoy doing before we get started into the book.
I think what I enjoy doing is taking a complicated topic or a topic that confuses people and making it simpler and more approachable and presenting the information in a way that it's easier to learn for beginners. So that's what I did with Git. And that's what I also do in my day job, because I work as a technical writer. So in my day job, I also take various topics and explain them in a simpler way and present information in a simple way so that people can consume it better.
Fantastic. And that's so important, you know, having a technical writing background myself as well. It's just super important that when a user comes, you know, and looks for the documentation, that it is written in such a way that you can actually help them to move forward and get past the problem that's made them go and look at the documentation in the first place, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm going to not derail this interview completely with how annoyed I can get at Git sometimes, but I think maybe some of our audience might share some of those frustrations. What was your primary motivator behind writing this book?
Okay, so the reason I wrote this book is because I needed this book. So I'm just going to backtrack a little and say that my entryway into the world of tech was through the world of UX design, so user experience design. So at some point in my life, I did a UX design bootcamp and I worked as a UX designer. And then when I was working as a UX designer, I'd realized that I knew how to design apps and websites. So I was sort of like an architect, but I didn't know how to actually build those apps and websites. I wasn't like the construction company that gets the blueprints and actually builds them. And I got really curious about how these things are built. So I ended up doing a coding bootcamp. And that's kind of a 3 to 4 month intensive program, learned the basics of web development, and then worked as a front end developer. And the first time that I got introduced to Git was in that coding bootcamp. But it was 1 hour where they just kind of told us, Git add, Git commit, Git push, go. Off you go. And obviously, that may have been sort of enough when you were just working on your own, on your projects in the coding bootcamp. But once I got my first job as a junior front-end developer, and I had to work with a team of developers and senior developers, I was terrified of Git. I mean, every time I had to do something that I deemed was complicated, which was almost everything, I would call on the senior developers and ask them to help me. And I was always worried I was about to destroy the repository and take down the entire platform and the entire website. And this was like a massive e-commerce platform. So that would have not been good. Little did I know that that was not the case and that was never going to happen. But Anyways, so at some point during that job, I realized I want to conquer this fear. I want to learn how to use Git and I want to understand how it works so that I can be an independent developer and not have to ask for help all the time. So I started learning, looking for online resources to learn Git. And what I realized was that there weren't really any online resources that were designed for people like me that were really new to tech, that had transitioned into tech from non-technical backgrounds, and that explained things in a simple way. And then at some point, this creative idea came to me of how I could teach Git using colors and storytelling and visuals. This was after I'd kind of understood some of the basics. So the first thing that I did was actually make an online course teaching Git. And that's still available online. At the moment, it's on Udemy. Who knows where it will be in the future. But that that journey, I thought that when I was making the online course, I still wanted to write a book. But I thought that the barrier to entry to write the book was higher than to make an online course, because with online courses, you just kind of record your voice, make some slides, record them. So I could do that a lot easier and publish it online a lot easier. But once I released that online course, I started getting reviews, I started getting feedback, and I realized my way of teaching Git really resonated with a lot of people. There were a lot of people that, just like me, had not been served by the Git teaching resources out there up until now. And my approach to organizing information and presenting concepts worked for them. And then I was like, all right, since it works, let's write this book. I am also a writer in my personal time, and I love to journal. So writing is my medium of choice. That's kind of how this book came about. This is the book that I wish I had had in my first week of that coding bootcamp, or especially in that first week of my new job as a front-end developer.
100%. And just in hearing that story, there's so much that resonated with me. People I've talked about, regardless of how you end up in the profession, whether you're coming through a degree, you're coming through a boot camp, you're self-taught, whatever it is, how much you learn about version control and, you know, Git as part of that is really variable. In my experience, sometimes it's purely conceptual. It's like, there is this thing that you can do. You will learn about it on your job. And then you turn up at your job and you're like, oh, I'm terrified. I'm going to delete the whole repository. So I think we've all been there, and I think we've all had experience of knowing who, or even being at times, that expert in Git on the team that people go to when they've gone beyond the Git pull, or, you know, Git update, Git push. They've gone beyond the basics and they're like, oh, I'm in trouble now. Something's not working. So I think certainly I identified with a lot of what you said there, and I expect our audience did as well. So.
Yeah, the other thing that actually has been very surprising is that it's not just developers that use Git. There are so many other people that work with developers or that do other jobs that use Git. So, and this I've discovered since publishing the book. Game artists, mechanical engineers also use Git. Sometimes UX designers have to collaborate with devs and share assets or whatever. Even product managers. So, And actually, one of the biggest audiences my book actually got was technical writers, because they often have this thing that we call docs as code approach, and they use Git to manage the repositories for the documentation websites. So some technical writers come from a technical background, but some don't. And so technical concepts don't come naturally to them. And yeah, so my book has really served various different audiences, including junior developers and experienced developers, but also just so many other professions, has been very eye-opening.
Yeah. And again, identified with it there, because it was back in my technical writing career and I started using Git and I needed that Git expert in the team, that developer. And I was like, I've got it in a mess. Please help me. So let's move swiftly on to talking about the book itself, which is why majority of the audience will be here. Can you give us an overview of the book and talk about its structure a little bit more,
please? Yeah, definitely. So the book is for absolute complete beginners. If you have a bit of experience, you can maybe try to skip a chapter. Normally, you should do it from the beginning to the end, though, because it's a hands-on learning experience where you're working on a specific repository throughout the entire book, which is actually called the Rainbow Repository, because you're listing the colors of the rainbow. I'll explain that a little bit more later, but the first chapter actually just starts off with installing Git and an introduction to the command line, because some people actually haven't worked in the command line and aren't familiar with it. So it really is a book for absolute beginners. And then I build this thing that I call the Git diagram, which is my way of creating a mental model of the different areas of Git and how they fit together. So you have your project directory, the working directory, the local repository, and then inside the local repository, you have the staging area and the commit history. And when I was learning Git, I came across diagrams that tried to kind of depict these different areas and how they interact, and they didn't really make sense to me. So I've actually created my own representation of these areas, and this is really key to my teaching methodology, because the main part of my teaching methodology is creating a mental model of how things work and making things tangible. So we build the Git diagram. And once we have that, we go over the process of making a commit. We introduce branches and what they are, and we create visualizations for all of these things. So I visualize what branches look like. They're just pointers to commits. Then what else? I have a list here. I go over merging, and I introduce the two types of merges, fast-forward merges, three-way merges. We're at chapter 5 now. And there we just go over the experience of doing a fast-forward merge, not yet a three-way merge. That's a bit more spicy, and it comes later on in the learning journey. And then in chapter 6 is when we actually go from working just in the local repository, just on your computer, on your own, and we introduce hosting services, so GitHub, GitLab, Bitbucket, and remote repositories, basically. So one thing I should mention right now, just a quick parenthesis, is that the book is not prescriptive. So you can use whichever hosting service you want. You can use whichever text editor you want. I didn't want to exclude anyone that uses maybe a different technology, and I wanted to make the book accessible to anything. So that closing parentheses. Now, moving on, chapter 7, we jump into creating and pushing to a remote repository. So we're really into, you know, local repository, remote repository. Chapter 8, we go over cloning and fetching data. So in chapter 8 is where the learning experience, we simulate that you're working with another person. So in the book, we say that a friend of yours wants to join you on your Rainbow project. So they create they clone your remote repository, and they create a local repository called Friend Rainbow. And I mean, if you have a friend that you can actually do all the exercises with, then that's ideal. But the most realistic thing is that you just create a second local repository on your computer, and you just kind of pretend it's on someone else's computer. But this is really important, because at the end of the day, Git is a collaboration tool, right? It's version control and collaboration. So if you don't have any representations of how the collaboration happens, then that leaves out basically more than half of Git. So chapter 8, you're learning how to clone, how to fetch data from a remote repository. And chapter 9, finally, we get into the spicy topic of, well, not that spicy. Three-way merges are pretty simple, but then chapter 10, we get into merge conflicts, which is the spicier topic and the thing that a lot of people are afraid of. Chapter 11, rebasing. Rebasing, I'd say, is the most advanced thing that I cover in my book. Like I said, this book is a real basics and beginner book. So rebasing is, at the end. And finally, the last chapter is pull requests or merge requests, whatever terminology you want to use. And obviously, pull requests, merge requests, they're not actually a feature of Git itself. They're a feature of the hosting services. So GitHub, GitLab, Bitbucket, and others. There are others. I'm just not going to start naming 20 different hosting services. But I thought that they were so important because they really, they're essential almost for everyone's workflow. So I thought, okay, I'll make an exception and include them, even though this is a book about Git. And yeah, that's kind of an overview. And like I mentioned, you're working on this rainbow project and it's hands-on. You are with your computer doing the exercises. So you are supposed to do the book from chapter 1 to chapter 12, because if you don't, then you'll miss out. You won't be able to follow along. But I have created an appendix where I've offered instructions on how someone can start, like create the minimum setup for their project to start off on any chapter. Because yeah, maybe you read the book once and then you just want to review chapter 8, or you just want to review chapter 9, and you don't want to have to go from chapter 1 all the way to that chapter just to be able to review it. But yeah, that's a kind of overview of the book.
Brilliant. So for my next question, I'm going to use the book as my demo so the audience can see what I'm talking about when I ask this next question. So for example, you've made extensive use of color in this book.
Yeah.
And you mentioned the Rainbow Project repeatedly. What made you choose that theme and why?
Yeah. So when my creative idea of how I could teach Git in a simple way came to me, it was all about using color, because I thought to myself, one of the really confusing or difficult things with Git when you're teaching it is that there's commit hashes. So every commit, a commit is a version of your project. Every commit has a commit hash. So 40 characters, letters and numbers, that's unique. And it's like a name for the commit. But if you're teaching Git and you're having to refer to, well, remember commit 69Z, blah, 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 blah. That is so confusing. And I mean, who wants to learn like that? So I thought to myself, how could I use color instead? And so let me give an example. In the Rainbow project, the very first thing you add to your project, you create a rainbow.txt file. So a text file, very simple. I keep everything really simple and I'll make a comment about that in a second. And the first thing you add is just red is the first color of the rainbow. You just add that sentence, first line of your file, and you add that to the staging area and you make a commit. And then I represent that commit in the diagrams as a circle that is red. And so from then on, I could just say the red commit. And that just simplifies the learning experience. It makes it a lot more memorable and also very much more visual, because I'm not having to include like a little commit hash in my diagram to try to refer to the commit. And yeah, that's why I use color in my teaching methodology. And the other really important, and the rainbow was just a really nice way to structure it. You know, we all, well, many of us, most of us know the order of the colors of the rainbow. So it's a very familiar thing. And it was easy to then, structure the whole book that way. Although at the end, I ran out of colors and I just had to add some random colors. I actually have, at the end, you add another file to your project called othercolors.txt, and you start adding like, pink is not a color in the rainbow and gray is not a color in the rainbow, because I literally ran out of colors, but also because I wanted to show, you know, how you add new files to your project. But the other thing I wanted to say about keeping things simple is that one of the decisions I made with this book is that it would have no code in it. So the files in your project are just .txt files, which are just really plain text files. They're not even markdown files. Like, it is so simple, because I thought if I make the project that you work on in the book, a web development project or a data science project, a Java project, a Python project, anything, it will exclude some people for whom that is not familiar. And let's say, yeah, fine. Well, those people can go and look it up. It just complicates things. It's not necessary. I wanted someone to just be able to focus on learning the concepts of Git rather than having to also learn other tech concepts, which are not relevant to just learning Git. So yeah, that was my way of approaching, how to teach this stuff.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Should I be excited or afraid of AI? The answer is yes, it's both.
Things are going to look so different in the next couple years. You will not be ready for the disruptions that are going to come.
I'm Jeff Nielsen, host of Digital Disruption, the go-to podcast for technology leaders.
Our generation's conflict, I think, is going to be emotional, not economic.
The companies that are going to win are the ones that have a couple of characteristics.
Stay ahead of the curve with Digital Disruption. Available now on your favorite podcast platform.
That's great. And I think what's really helpful and insightful is the very deliberate decisions that you made along the way. You know, this didn't just happen by accident. You made a very deliberate choice that I'm going to represent hashes by with blobs of color, and therefore I'm going to refer to those. And you made a very deliberate choice to use TXT files, a concept that is going to be familiar to your entire audience. So I really like that you made those conscious decisions up front to create the learning journey that, you know, you said yourself you wanted when you first started working with Git.
Yeah, one more I can add is screenshots.
Go for it.
Yeah, I decided not a single screenshot in my book because I thought to myself, the minute I add a screenshot, the book is out of date. And since I was able to, with Helen knows this because she wrote a book with lots of screenshots. but you have to have screenshots in yours. Topic. I think that was another really, really conscious decision of mine of since it's not necessary, don't include screenshots because again, they're not relevant to everyone. Everyone has a different operating system and a different version and UI changes. And, the minute that the book goes to print, it would be out of date. So that was another really conscious decision I made for this book.
Good call out. And yes, the pain is real. just ask my co-author, Trisha G, who updated them all. Okay, so the next question is kind of a double question. You can answer it in any order you like. But it's, who should read this book? And equally as importantly, who is this book not for?
Yeah. Okay, so who should read this book? I think anyone that wants to learn Git, so they've never used Git and someone's told them they have to, or they realize they have to for their work or for their personal project. So anyone that wants to learn Git, anyone that's confused by Git. I have talked to developers with 10 years experience that still are afraid of Git and don't have a mental model that they can reliably like use and feel confident with. And they even tell me this book helped me to put things together. Junior developers, anyone that doesn't yet really understand how the pieces come together. Because what happens is when you don't have a good mental model of Git, once you start, like maybe you're okay with doing the Git add, Git commit, Git push, but once you start going to the more advanced topics, you don't really understand how they work. And that's where you start getting really confused and scared and it all becomes a bit challenging. So that's who I think could benefit from this book. Also, I would say anyone that's a visual learner and anyone that's kind of more like a tactile, like wants to like see, kind of make things tangible type of learner. I do have to say, you know, this book isn't for everyone. Not everyone's a visual learner. And I totally appreciate that. And that means that this book will appeal to a certain type of learner, but not to another. Now, let's get to the topic of who this book is not for. It's not for anyone that uses Git and really has their own mental model of how it works and it works for them. And they never really struggle with understanding things. I mean, they don't need it. It's not for anyone that's looking for an advanced guide to Git, you know, that goes over advanced, features of Git, more niche commands. It's not for them. That stuff is not in the book. So they'll not get anything from it. It's also not for anyone that's looking for a resource that will teach them what their Git workflow should be or what best practices should be. So in the book, I don't teach you like, oh, well, the best branching workflow is this and this and this, or, I don't know. This is how you should set things up. Like I said, the book is not at all prescriptive. And actually, to be honest, the Rainbow Project is not a really realistic project of a software project. I mean, you're listing the colors of the rainbow. That's not really what you're usually doing when you're building software. So for a lot of developers, for example, the example in the book is not so realistic. It's more about building that mental model. Although I do have a second example in the book, which is called the Example Book Project, which is a little bit more realistic because it uses storytelling to provide a bit more of a realistic use of Git, but again, it's not. And the other thing is anyone looking for other best practices, like how should I be naming my branches? What should I be including in a commit? Let me think, what else? So those kinds of things, I don't provide any guidance on that because, like I said, I focus on teaching a mental model, and those things are really they're really kind of dependent on your opinion, on which company you work in, which sector you work in, what your background is, what you personally like in branch names and in, or commit messages. So it was not something that I wanted to confuse and people with and clutter up the book with. I think there's plenty of other resources in the world that provide guidance on that. And the final thing is that this book is not a reference. So it's really kind of a learning journey. It's a hands-on learning journey. But it's not the kind of book that you would be like, oh, you know, each chapter, I don't know, it's not a reference guide. So to be honest, the Git website is the best reference. I mean, it is a reference. They have a reference. So git-stm.com, you got a reference there, and other people have built a reference. I think that's kind of who the book is for and who the book isn't for.
Okay. So we've mentioned previously that the book is designed to be a sequential learning experience. Start at the beginning, progress, at least, especially if you're new to Git. But there's going to be people out there that will definitely have the question of how much Git experience do I need if I'm going to buy this book? And what's the answer to that one?
Zero. That's an easy answer. I could just like zero. I have nothing else to say. No, zero, really. Like I mentioned in the very first chapter, we go over the process of downloading Git. Kind of setting up like the basics. And I even introduce the command line. Like I tell you, this is the app that is the command line. Open the command line. This is the command prompt. This is where you enter commands. You write a command and you press enter. And I introduce some like very basic, commands like CD, change directory, or LS, like list the files. The visible files. I introduce the concept of visible files and hidden files. I introduce like, I don't know, mkdir, so make directory, just a couple super basic, commands. So yeah, we go from the very start. Like chapter two is, you know, introducing that Git diagram. And so zero. I user tested. We'll get into that later, but I literally gave this book to my brother, my dad, people that are, at least my brother, not at all in the tech space, or at least not developers of any kind at the moment, at least. It's zero.
Brilliant. We're going to get to that now. So you people who get value from this book, no Git experience is necessary, none whatsoever. Road tested with your dad and brother, amongst other people, and tells a sequential journey. Anybody who is looking to understand the mental model of Git, anybody who perhaps has been using Git but is a little bit less confident around some of the operations, you know, whether they're the more advanced ones like rebase or the spicy three-way merge, which is absolutely what I'm always going to call the three-way merge from this point forward in my career, always going to prefix it with spicy. And anybody who just needs to brush up on some of those underlying concepts, because Git is very you need to build on top of the basics. If you don't understand the basics in Git, then the more advanced stuff, the more advanced commands tend to be more challenging than perhaps they would be if you had a good grasp of the underlying mental model.
Yeah. It's true.
Awesome. Okay, so let's stick with advanced topics. Is there anything that you really, really, really wanted to get into the book, but just, you know, you've got to draw the line somewhere? Is there anything, you're like, oh, I really wanted to put that in, but I just, you know, you had a cutoff for it?
That's a really good question. And I've been asked this before, but to be honest, I think I am in quite a unique position that, unlike many other authors who had a lot more in their books and needed to cut down, or just, yeah, the books got way too big. I had a very clear idea of what the basics were, maybe because I'd already made the online course, which already had the basics. And so I didn't really have that situation. I didn't have anything that I was like, oh, but I really wish I could fit this in. The only thing I would say maybe that I was considering squeezing into one of the chapters was stashing. But I mean, it's not like a huge, massive thing that I really, really, you know, was like, oh, I can't believe this won't fit in. Because to be honest, if I, you know, the book is still pretty lean. It's very minimalist. So if I had ultimately decided that this is essential, I would have included it. Actually, in my case, I think the pull request, merge request chapter was actually not even part of my original plan. And I think later on, I realized, no, this is really important. I need to add this on. So actually, my book was like too lean. And I was like, I think even rebasing, I was kind of, no, rebasing, I think I had from the beginning. But yeah, I was like super lean. And I was like, okay, but maybe I should add a little bit extra. So I think I thought that the most generous thing that I could do for my readers and for my learners was to be as simple and minimalist as possible and just give the bare basics. And in that way, just make it less overwhelming, because tech is so overwhelming. There's just so much information and so much going on. So if I could just create one learning experience, which would not be overwhelming, I was like, yes, I shall do this.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Now in its fifth season, Inspiring Tech Leaders is the podcast that talks about technology strategies, challenges, and breakthroughs shaping today's digital world. Each week, Inspiring Tech Leaders brings you technology reviews and interviews with visionary CIOs, CTOs, and industry pioneers. Whether you're leading a tech team or just love innovation, Inspiring Tech Leaders is your go-to source for inspiration and real-world advice. Subscribe now on your favorite podcast platform.
Fantastic. Thank you. So I'm wondering if in our audience today, we might have some budding authors, other people out there who perhaps want to author a book. I know, see, I've co-authored a book, so I absolutely appreciate the effort that goes into the process and then some. Do you have any advice for anybody who might be listening, who's thinking, oh yeah, I know a thing. I'm going to write a book about that thing.
Yeah. So anything I'm about to say is just going to come from my own experience. So you never know, it might not apply to others. And anything I'm going to say is probably just going to refer to technical book authors, because I have not yet written another kind of book. So I don't want to say that I can speak on that. But for technical book potential authors, I would say one of the things that I really appreciated in my journey was that I sort of wrote this book as if it was an app. Like, I made a prototype and then I user tested that prototype. And then I took all the feedback and I iterated, and then I user tested again. And then I took all the feedback and I iterated. And the first prototype was ugly. It was very, very ugly, and it was very rough, and it was not at all the finished product. I actually user tested when I just had 4 chapters ready, because I thought, well, let me check if this is making any sense to anyone, because if I've done 4 chapters and it doesn't make any sense, there's no point in writing the other 8 chapters. Or, you know, it's better for me to figure out what they are, what works for my audience before I write those other 8 chapters. So I had up to like 30 user testers throughout the 2 years that I was working on this book. And I think that was invaluable. The experience of having a diverse user testing audience. I mean, it went from the ages of 18 to 60, and from various professions, from all over the world. It was all remote user testing. Wait, actually, no, I also did in person, some in person, but most of it, almost all of it was, was remote. So I got people from all over the world. And it really did make my book a lot better. There were a lot of things I needed to change. I think sometimes, yeah, we just want to think that we're like this genius that like can create the best thing out of the outset. And like, oh my God, my ideas are so good. But sometimes our creations need to have that chemical reaction with the audience in order to really become what they need. Just one funny story, since we're at it. At the beginning, I thought that my book would actually, people would have like a pencil case with them and paper, and they would actually draw out the commits. So in the beginning of the preface, I was like, oh, you have to buy a colored pencils and you should like follow along and you should draw the commits. And when I did that user testing, nobody did that. And I had the colored pencils with me. I brought them and nobody did it. So then I was like, okay, well, I guess this isn't something, you know, if somebody does want to do it, they can, but it wasn't something that made sense. And I mean, that's just a non-technical example, but there were plenty of other things where I got feedback of this doesn't make sense to me, or you forgot about this. I'm a Mac user. So there were a lot of, Windows users that told me like, hey, you need to mention this. You need to mention that because this doesn't make sense for me, or this doesn't apply to me.
Right.
Or, you know, you need to simplify this. This isn't, you know, I'm not aware of this concept. So yeah. My monologue about user testing and how good it is over now. But yeah, really, really, I really recommend.
Importance of user testing and yeah, colored pencils or not in your case.
Yeah.
Fantastic. So we've spoken a little bit about your Udemy course. We've spoken a lot about your book. What's next for you? Is there anything else in the pipeline?
That's a good question, Helen. I don't know what's next. I do know that I've started working on a book. I cannot share anything about it. It shall remain a mystery. People can, you know, we'll, at the end, we'll talk about links where people can find me. But it may not end up being a technical book, so I'm not sure yet. I'm still exploring. Well, I've started working on something, but until I commit to a creative idea or a creative project, I flirt with a lot of different creative ideas and creative projects. So, I definitely want to keep creating. I loved the process of creating something that helps people and that explains things in a simple way. But what that next thing is going to be is still, under wraps. So we'll see. For now, I'm just adjusting to my new technical writer position and enjoying kind of sharing the journey I had with this book.
Wonderful. A mystery.
Yes, a mystery.
I do like a mystery.
Maybe that's how I get people to follow me, you know? It's kind of self-serving. If I make it mysterious, people have to come and, you know, follow me to find out what it is when I'm ready to share it.
I think that is the perfect segue. So if people want to find out about this mystery in time or learn more about your book or your courses or whatever is coming next for you, Anna, where should they go?
So the first thing I'll say is that I'm the only Anna Skulikari on this planet. So just look me up, Anna, two N's, A-N-N-A. Last name, Skulikari. Just Google me. But other than that, I have a website, annaskulikari.com. So that is one good place. The platform that I'm currently most active on is LinkedIn. So you can connect with me or follow me there. And then other than that, you can find my book all over the place, Amazon and plenty of other places. You can find my online course on Udemy at the moment. It's difficult to tell people where to find you because you always think, well, the social media landscape changes all the time. So this might not be relevant in a year or 2 years from now. Yeah. And maybe I'll start using something else. So I do have a Twitter. I don't use it much. Maybe I use it. Oh, whoops. Sorry. X. anyways, so I'd say my website and LinkedIn are currently the best places to find out more about me and what I'm doing. And then other than that, I just want to share with the audience that I do have a link that for the rest of 2024 is still going to be active, which we can leave in the notes, which gives people 30-day free access to the O'Reilly online learning platform. And on there, you can read my book basically in 30 days. So we can leave that in the notes, and you actually have access to all the resources on there. So if you want to take a peek at anything else, feel free. It doesn't automatically subscribe you. Just get those 30 days and then you can choose whether you want to continue. I think those are the best places.
Perfect. And we will, of course, put all of that information in the show notes, including that link for 30-day access to the O'Reilly platform. So I think that just about brings us to the end of this interview. So, Anna, do you have any final words that you'd like to share today?
Ooh, that's a good question. Since the audience, there's going to be a mix of junior developers, senior developers, and various other people in the tech profession, I'd say if you yourself maybe understand Git, but you have a friend or anyone you know that is struggling with it, feel free to recommend them to take a peek at the book and see whether it is the right learning journey and learning resource for them. It might be, it might not, but if you do have anyone that is struggling with Git, which many of us do, feel free to kind of just share it with them in case you think it can serve them.
Fantastic. And I'd second that, especially with the 30-day free access. I mean, that's a win-win. You can check out the book. I am fortunate enough to have this lovely physical copy of it.
Yes.
But Anna, thank you. Thank you for coming to this interview, for sharing your knowledge and writing this book. I've got a lot of value from it, and I know that our audience will as well. Thank you to the GoTo platform as well. And thank you to you, the audience, for tuning in and coming on this journey. All the show notes will be available to you. And that's it from us. Thank you very much.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks, Helen.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the GoTo podcast. Head over to gotopia.tech to discover lots more content from the brightest minds in software development.